This is Dave Seibold, and the interview that we're about to hear was taped on September 19th, 1991, at the home of Bob Warner on 1236 Sheldon in Grand Haven. Also in the interview is Doug Baker, as well as Bob Warner, of course. The first voice that you're going to hear when the interview gets underway will be that of Bob Warner. The other then is Doug Baker, as well as my own. But with those three voices, perhaps you'll be able to determine which is which as the interview progresses. These men epitomize what music really was in the Grand Haven area, really the entertainment capital of West Michigan, back during the swing era, when it began in the 20s and 30s, right up to the time when it no longer existed. Both men still are very, very involved in their music. Bob has his Bob Warner Big Band down at the waterfront every Wednesday, and Doug Baker, of course, is a member of that band. In addition to that, Bob Warner is still actively involved in arranging music, which, as you will see as the interview progresses, Doug admits must take a genius, really, to perform. So it's a very interesting interview, and let's pick it up at this point.
Sweatshirt.
Oh, you're kidding.
Well, maybe you left after we got
here. Yeah, I did, because I graduated in 32.
We had capes when I was in.
I remember...
I'm going to rearrange the
print. All we had was sweatshirts.
See, I thought you were on the history of jazz. Isn't that what you said?
Well, yeah.
Well, here's, I got you 100 bands that were touring the country at that time.
Wow.
Over 100. And they were all pretty good. The guys that would come to Fruitport and all that.
Okay. Now, did all of these, Les Brown, Charlie Burnett, Ted Williams, Wayne King, Jan Gerber, Kay Kaiser, Horace Heidt.
See ya.
Husko Hare, don't remember that.
And the genial gentleman of the year.
They all had little slogans, you know.
Yeah, they all had their little things.
Sauter Finnegan. Oh,
yeah,
that's more recent.
That was more recent. I thought of that later.
Danny Russo.
That was the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah,
in Chicago.
Yeah.
Seymour Simons.
That's Milwaukee.
That's
band.
The Milwaukee. Huh?
Frankie Masters. Remember that? Glenn Miller, of course. Ray Anthony. Guy Lumbago. Louis Panico.
Louis Panico.
Yeah.
Vincent Lopez.
Yeah.
Benny Moten. No.
Benny Moten.
Moten. Was that?
Well, that was a jazz band.
That's where you get Moten Swing from.
Moten Swing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He was down in New Orleans, and he was one of the first ones that came up to St. Louis and Chicago.
Yeah. Barney Rapp. Ben Pollock.
Yeah, well, boy. Oh, he had a good band. He had Benny Goodman in there and Gene Krupa. He had all those guys when they were just starting out in his band.
Buddy DeFranco. Al McIntyre, Jimmy Lunsford, Noble Sissel,
remember
him.
Black Boy,
And Coon Saunders.
Oh, guys.
Him too.
Nice.
Is he black?
Yep.
The
black.
No,
oh,
Coon Saunders was not black.
Coon Saunders was the piano player, the old left hander.
I don't think he was black, was he?
No, I don't think they were.
They used to play in Chicago.
Yeah.
The Blackhawk.
I think they came up to Fruitport too once.
Well, listen, we don't want to get into all of them yet. What is your give me the big picture?
Well,
you're writing a book about Grand Haven.
Right. Yeah, and it's going to try to update Leo Lilly's book from 1890 up to the present time. See, he wrote.
Where did he leave off?
1890.
Oh, did he?
Well, I didn't think it was that far.
I didn't either.
See, and even though he published it in 1930.
Yeah.
There's 40 years that he left out, and I couldn't understand why he had done that. But as an attorney, he was probably pretty smart, because I found now, in this one that I tried to write, the closer you get to current events, the more opinions you have as to how it ought to be written. And so probably what he did was just say, well, I'll cut it off there.
And nobody will remember.
There's no one living.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that 40-year period.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
Of course, the thing that you like to cover all the bases, and it's almost impossible to be an expert on the highways and the schools and the churches and sports and everything. but try to do the best you can.
You probably talked to a lot of older people that were around here at 1900. Yeah, haven't you talked to any older people that were that old, 90, in their 90s?
Yes, right, I have.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest one that I have interviewed is Mabel Sutherland. Do you remember Mabel?
Lives next to Marion Sherwood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she was Bunny Sherwood's. That would have been Marion's dad, I guess. When he first came here from Allegan.
Maybe.
As a clerk.
B.P. Sherwood, yeah, it could have been Bunny for a
Bunny.
Nickname.
Yeah,
I never heard him called Bunny, but
yeah. But when the bank was over where Records is, she was a secretary, I guess, whatever you want to call it. And then when it moved across the street in 1911, she went right over there with him.
Is she still sharp enough to talk to her?
No, okay. She isn't. And I had to do that interview when she didn't know it. But I asked her son, Stanley, if we could. Yeah. He said, sure. She was up as a patient. And any time she came up there, came to the office, she'd begin to just reminisce. And I thought, boy, I could just get a tape recorder in here. But she can't see now.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to sneak it in and just turn it in. We've got about an hour to just her talking.
God, she's got to be old.
Well, what
still is all on in that
what
house,
can right? Doug and I okay. intro to her?
Well,
what,
yeah.
Single in what okay. we're talking about.
What I want to do is to find out, you guys, both of you, are the deans of music around here. Of course, you're still going, you're both still going at it.
Oh, yeah.
But what I'd like to find out is, who stimulated your interest in music? Did it come from the home, or did it come from a teacher in school?
Well, that's a good. I could probably give you a good thing on that because the person that stimulated me into music and into writing music was a guy named his name just get me down. Professor Morrison was it? I think Professor what was there? You ever hear?
It was the Morrison that directed the high school band there before Richards came.
That's
in.
Right. It was Professor Morrison. He's an old-fashioned fellow. Long hair like Einstein, little guy, and he had quite a few experiences of musically around the area, around outside of Michigan too. I don't know too much about that, but he came to Grand Haven as sort of an old man by that time, and taught music. Now I don't know of him teaching or directing a band. I was in the junior high at that time, or grade school. And I started taking lessons from him. I think that Richards was already in the high school band.
Now, what year was that?
This was I would say this had to be about 19. Let's see, 27.
Yeah. 27. Because I don't remember him at all. That's before I got into the music end of it. Morrison, I just remember that name. I don't even remember what he looks like.
Professor Morrison.
You got him ahead of me.
And did he call him Professor, even though...
Yeah, he was the old-fashioned guy, you know. I called him Professor. He looked like a professor, too, with the old hair and everything. He looked like Einstein, like I say, or some of those bushy-haired piano players from the old days.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was teaching in the junior high. I don't know as a regular basis or what, but he was there. And I had bought an old alto horn. I don't know where I got it from. It was upright alto.
Like a French horn.
Only that's a mellophone that was later on, but not
peckhorn, they call them.
Alto horn. Anyway, And
Peckhorn, because they played a lot of afterbeats with the things, didn't they?
And they had at that time, I think that probably Richard Richards started this, they had at that time a little test for everybody at school when I was in junior high or at the grade school, I guess. And this was a record player, a big record that they played on an old-fashioned machine with steel needles and everything. And they would play two tones, you know, toot, toot, and then they would make one higher or lower than the other, but very, very small graduations. You could hardly tell. At first, I know a lot of times I said, on my answer, I says that's the same. And I guess later on I found out there were some the same, too, which was a good idea when I checked it. And I had some, and I thought the second one was lower, second one higher, and I did that, and I put it on a piece of paper. A lot of kids did. And finally I got a report back saying that I was, you know, pretty well capable of tone, differentiations, and I should be a musician, and I should play. Well, I had, at that time I had already played...
took place in school.
Huh?
All took place in school.
All in school.
That's pretty amazing.
In fact, and the junior, that big old building, you know, and on the third floor...
Central school.
It was there was the old high school. It was everything at one time.
On 7th Street.
The one that burned down. Big fire.
That's Central School.
That's Central.
Yeah.
That was Central, yeah.
And on the third floor, there's a big assembly room with a study hall and everything there. And I had to go over there, up the stairs to that place, and took the test, a lot of other people. Well, finally, I think M.F. Richards had started that up. Anyway, it must have been that Morrison was working in the junior high for Richards. That's what the way it would be. Anyway, I got a report, and all that, and I should see Professor Morrison. So I went to see him, and he says, well, have you taken any music? I says, yeah. I says, I took one of your piano too long ago from somebody. I can think of those names later on. But I says, I gave it up. I was at the age of 12. I says, I wished I didn't, of course, but I was quite good at that, too, and I took my piano. The only trouble with my piano lessons was that she didn't push me fast enough, and I could learn when she was telling me how it went, give me the new lesson, tell me how it went. I could see how it went, and I forgot about it until the next time I came to the lesson, and I played it because I could remember what she was doing, and it was easy for me. But she didn't give me a whole lot of stuff. See. Anyway,
it's pretty unusual.
It dragged a little bit, and then I got into the Boy Scouts, and I quit that. But this thing here, getting back to that again now. I did see Mr. Morrison, and he told me I should get a horn of some kind, or instrument, whatever. And somebody did have an old alto horn, and he knew about that. He says, you can get it for $10, something like that. And so, I got it, and I went to him, and I took lessons from him. And I don't remember so much about his lessons, like I did later on, too. He wrote them all himself. He did not have a book. You didn't have a book with him. He wrote a new lesson for you every day, and I did that with my students later on, too. Because I could tell what the weaknesses were, and I could write lessons that would be right, that would sort of take care of those weaknesses if I could. And that's what he did with me. So I could see him with that pen, I'd never forget it yet, on that music paper. I could see him writing those little notes. And I thought to me, I'd like to do that sometime. That's for me. And he'd write those lessons out, and every day I'd look, I'd take it home, I'd say, boy, I bet I could do that, and I'd get some more paper, and I'd try to do a little bit. And finally, I learned all the notes, because I didn't know the notes already from the piano lessons, but the fingerings and everything, and the first thing you know, it wasn't too much later, he died. And I was such a good student with him, and I had so much fun talking to him, and talking about arrangements and everything, arranging, because he was a good arranger. He'd arrange for concert bands and everything.
He wrote a
stack of old music too. That I stole all them old manuscripts that I got now.
Didn't he write a march for Grand Haven High School?
He wrote one for the York Instrument Company Band Sales March. I remember that, and it was published. Mm-hmm. But
by the way, who did write the Grand Haven's school?
Well, they copied the one from on Wisconsin,
and then they
used Yale Bula before that. But then somebody wrote an original Grand Haven. Was that Merwin or? Who wrote the original the piece that Grand Haven High School uses? Was that L. Burgess or
that's still I think that still is a college or a school. Oh,
I have never heard it before.
I never heard a lot of those before. If you go down some of those schools around further away from here, they could have been somebody's original somewhere. I don't know. I didn't know anybody wrote it here. But anyway, that's the way it went with Mr. Morrison, and then he died. I got out of junior high and went to high school. I don't know the years. I can't remember the years. How long he lived after I left junior high. Anyway, I got into high school and I started to play I got into the band right off the bat. I says, "Gosh, this is never played in a band before in my life." He says, "Well," I said, "I heard that you can play." So
this is Richards.
Yeah, it's Richards.
Yeah, Marshall F. Richards. Still there.
Oh, and I can remember.
Age 94. He's down in Florida somewhere.
Yeah. So they gave me the downbeat came down, and they crashed the cymbal and the bass. Everybody tooting. I got so scared that I almost wet my pants. Wow, that sounds like a loud song to me.
Now, was this ninth grade or tenth?
I was in the ninth grade then.
Yeah.
Because they had 4 years of school.
Sure. Where were you at that time then?
Junior high. I was just starting out with Richards in junior high then. He was about a senior when I was a freshman.
Okay.
In the high school band. So, and he was a freshman. I had to be about sixth or seventh grade just getting my first clarinet with old Marshall Richards, see.
But he was even teaching down in those
days. He was teaching junior high, too. Sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Morrison must have died during
Fort Worth. He died because I don't remember anything about Morrison. He was gone before I came on that musical scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was there way before that for getting interest. My uncle was the director of Thompson's Jackie Band. And they used to rehearse down in Nels Fisher's coal building, which is where the Snug Harbor is now, kind of just north of that. Mm-hmm. They had a coal yard there.
Sure.
And they'd have all the guys in town. This was a town band, not a high school, no school connection. Mm-hmm. It was a municipal band. And this was Grand Haven's own band that went out to march in the parade in Holland, and whenever they wanted a band from Grand Haven, this was Thompson's Jackie Band, they called it.
But they were dressed as sailors, is that right?
Kind of, yeah. That's
where the name Jackie comes from.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Thompson's Jackie Band. And
so your uncle?
My uncle, who really didn't know much about music, but he was kind of like, I call him a musical organizer, so like Frank Lackage is one. Didn't know much about music, but they organized it. This Tom Ravelli we played with in Florida. They organize the thing, and they get the jobs, and they get the guys, and they don't have to know much about music. They just wave their hand up and down, and they get a big boot out of it. And actually, and they do all the work, see?
Uh-huh.
And the guys that play, why, that's fine. They like somebody to go out and beat the bushes and get the jobs and all that.
You must have had a lot of information about the Jackie Band.
Well, not much, surprisingly.
There should be pictures of them marching around.
Anybody that could play a horn before this high school band day,
if you could play a horn of any kind, you were invited to get onto that Nels Fisher Bridles coal dock and sit and play with the Jackie Band. And I guess they weren't too bad for a marching band.
Well, I guess not. They... they had all the little short cornets. I've seen pictures of them all over. The museum must even have pictures of them.
There are plenty of pictures. But, the stories that you're just telling,
they were just like the clown band in Scottville. They go all over, around, whatever it was, and just have a lot of fun. They don't practice or anything, but just play.
They played marches mostly, easy marches.
Sure, sure.
And my uncle used to take... I was just a kid then. I was between 6 and 12 years old, before the Boy Scouts even, and I'd go down and listen, boy, I thought, gee, that was great. When they were practicing, you know.
Didn't they give some concerts at the Central Park?
Central Park they used to
give concerts. You remember seeing those things?
Sure.
I thought the Jackie Band was gone at the turn of the century.
No, that was just about gone, in 1918, around the 25 or in there, 25 or so, 26. Mid-20s is when they were disbanded. I don't know why they did it, but... I guess my uncle got too old, that's why.
But they had...
Just like Bob, the Warner Band is soon going to disorganize because Warner's getting too old. That's what happens to him. Another thing funny about my uncle, he used to pump the church organ. My aunt was the organist for Presbyterian Church, Isa Thompson. And when Uncle Andrew sort of fell asleep after the service, sometimes he'd forget to pump the damn air and there wouldn't be any air in that organ. That's when the church was on the... It was right across from your office. It was on 5th and Franklin there.
Right.
Yeah, that church there.
Yeah, I remember. And that building had been moved from down on Washington Street to that point.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I do know that there was a band organized after the Jackie Band, and they used to practice in the old armory. And that had to be about 1930, because
25 to 30.
They needed some mellophone players, and so they looked around at the high school, and they called me up, wanted to know if I wanted to play with them, so I went to their practices down there on that stage there at the Armory, and I remember there was a guy named Louis Slaughter was in that, and Bill Plum,
yeah.
The bass player.
What did they call that band?
I don't know, just the Grand Haven Band.
Yeah. Something like that.
And then after
did you
that,
play in that one?
Then the Elks came into the picture. And the Elks, I played some concerts at the park with that band. And then the Elks sort of took it over. And the Elks had a band for quite a long time.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really?
What time? Mm-hmm.
Now, was this part of their minstrel show? Their
no, not the minstrel show. It was just a band that they got together and practiced. And, and it was almost the guys that were in that minstrel band that I went first were all the ones that they were all in the Elks band, too. It's sort of a, almost maybe one turned into the other or something like that. But the Elks did have a concert band at the park.
And people years. Would show up for those.
Oh, a lot of people
would. Oh, listen, so we were just talking before you came. They had these bands at the Highland Gardens for the summer. I remember was Dee Peterson from Iowa, and another one was Pietro Brescia from Toledo. And they'd come up and play Highland Gardens for the summer, and every Sunday afternoon, part of the job was 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon concert, right on the porch, outside concert, and people were just packed in there where the Pirates' Den is now, mm-hmm. between there, right where you park your car. That would just be full of people listening to this orchestra play up there.
For free, too.
For free.
Yeah.
And, boy, these guys were good, too.
Well, all these things at the Central Park were free, of course.
Yeah.
And
the Jackie Band was all free.
Yeah.
That was free.
Was anyone paid?
No, I don't think so.
How did they get I wonder how they did that for uniforms nobody ever got paid for playing the jobs. That was just for fun.
Yeah.
But they had to have uniforms.
I don't know whether they got some old Navy uniforms, probably some old.
Yeah, and they put on their Jackie cap, those white caps they used to wear.
Van Lopik, right up above, McClellan's it was at that time, someplace along in that block, was making. Navy uniforms.
Maybe they
gave them to him. Yeah.
The seconds.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some names that
those are the
director of that Elks band, but I can't remember him. It's a long time ago. But there was definitely an Elks band playing concerts at the Central Park.
Yeah, Central Park where they had them too.
That had to be in the late 30s. I mean, the late 20s and early 30s.
Mm-hmm. That's 30s when you started out at Fruit Point, wasn't it?
Well, the late 20s and early 30s. Now, Fruit Point, we started the late 30s.
When did Frank actually get a hold of Fruit Point?
He got a hold of Fruit Point about 1937. I don't know if you want that. It's got anything to do with what you want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long story.
Frank Rockage at the Fruit Point Pavilion?
Listen, that's why I brought this. There's the old pavilion. I forgot what the date on this thing is. It said it burned down in 1963.
Yeah.
There's some of the pictures. It's a fairly recent publication, but...
And we got the memories of that place.
Well, I got pictures of the inside of it with the crowd.
There's that place, right? And every time we play on Saturday night, I'd look out that window to see where I was going to... Where the best place would be to jump when the place caught on fire. Remember that? Oh, God.
You were even suspicious then that was a fire.
Oh, if they never had a fire in there, we'd all been...
we all had it.
Incidentally,
the place we were going to jump off from. We looked outside there, and we weren't going towards the door because we knew we'd never get out of there.
Yeah, you could jump in the water.
So we had a place in there where it wasn't too deep, but it still wasn't too shallow, and we could jump in there.
Yeah.
We thought we'd get...
That list that I gave you there, now those bands, they'd come through during the week. Frank would get them on Tuesday or whenever he could get them for cheap, you see.
Uh-huh.
And these bands would be going from Milwaukee to Detroit or something and needed a stop-off place, and so he'd pick them up for practically nothing.
But he'd get them for a Friday, Saturday?
No, we were always a Saturday night band. Yeah. We were the house band, see, because night he'd get a crowd no matter what band was playing there.
I see.
But when these name bands, he'd get them during the week.
Frank.
There's old Frank. Couldn't play a note hardly in tune, but he
played the violin.
The musical contractor. Don't call him a musician.
Well, I'll tell you how that Fruitport thing started. See, that Fruitport was an interurban place that was built by the Interurban Company.
Yes.
The first part of the century, I think, pretty to that. It's not a new building at all. It wasn't. Anyway, it sort of lost its charm. And in the depression and everything else, the interurban pulled it up.
Yeah.
But the building stayed there, and I think it stayed empty for a long time. And once in a while, somebody would rent it for a little party. But there was a guy finally in Fruitport or something that bought the whole dumb thing. Had a cheap, I suppose, from the interurban company, the beach of the water and everything. See? And way that big parking lot in the back. And he had that for a long time. And Frank Lockage had a band in Muskegon for quite a long time, a small band. Usually polka bands sometimes. Anyway, to bring this all into the right sequence, that was about the time when I was starting to play. I just got out of high school in the early 30s, and we were getting some little bands around here. A lot of guys like Lloyd Krause and Gene Krause and Bill Eskew.
Martha McBride playing the piano.
No. Ray Johnson played the piano, and there's a big Ray Johnson played the sax, Ronnie Shields played the sax, Lloyd Krause played the trombone, Clarence Zimmerman played the trumpet. We had about 9 or 10 pieces, and we were hired by the tanner. We couldn't get a job anyplace, you know, at that time in the 30s. Oh, nobody had a buck or anything. And they offered us a job if we would have a tannery band. So I got a bunch of guys together, and we all told them, I says, you can get a job. And Jesus, I got people from all over wanting to get a job, see. But we just had my guys. I just had the guys that I played with around here, and a few extra to fill in.
You mean part of
got a job there.
Part of playing in your band was got a job working at the tannery besides.
We got a 40-hour, well, you played for nothing, of course, but
uh-huh.
You got a 40-hour-a-week job at 32 cents an hour.
I'll be darned.
Uh-huh. 40 hours for about $14-$13.
Uh-huh.
You know, we did. All we had menial jobs like in the shipping room, all the kind of bulwark and stuff, nothing really fancy. But we all got a job, and I'll tell you,
that's $13 more than anybody else would make.
That worked up to about $16 finally, when we deducted something. And in fact, 1936 or 7, that's when Social Security came in. And they started taking 16 cents out of our check for Social Security. Anyway, we did get a band going, and they built that recreation hall there at the time.
Yes.
When they built that. Then they got a basketball team, too, and got all the basketball players jobs. See? That's how they got to be a team. And then Whitehall did the same thing. They had a good big building over there and a team, too, but they didn't have the band. Our band went over there and played. And we had that band about a year, doing pretty good. We had big dances there and everything, doing fine. And Tony went on a strike. Big strike. One of the first strikes that ever happened to a major industry in the United States at that time was a walkout. And nobody did that in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But they just completely shut the thing down. And I come to work one morning, and the guy says, hey, can't go in there. Why not? We're on strike. Strike? I didn't know anything about a strike. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's beside the point. But then the band was in bad shape. That was in the spring of 67 or 6. I mean, there.
36.
36, yeah. And, but we had our band. So we started to play out. We played at the Midway Ballroom in Muskegon and all those different ballrooms around. And we got so that people knew us a little bit. And we played kind of a Jan Garber style. Ronnie Shields wrote some arrangements, and I wrote most of them. All that kind of Jan Garber style. You remember Jan Garber?
Yes,
band?
Right. Okay. Uh-huh.
Kind of a smeary type of thing like Guy Lombardo.
Uh-huh.
And, but it was popular, I'll tell you.
That was that style then.
Yeah, that's okay. What we were trying to do at that time.
It wasn't jazz yet. It was
no. We were not jazz. We weren't good enough to be jazz because, you know, we didn't have the too young to really play jazz at that time.
Uh-huh.
So, but we finally that one summer, Frank Lockage comes into the picture here again. He had a band about 10 guys at that time, and had to be about 1937, and those guys. Frank knew about this guy that owned Fruitport, talked to him and talked him into a deal where for $100 they could rent the building for the year and pay this guy some kind of a commission.
Mm.
So, but they didn't have the $100. So each fellow said he was going to chip in $10. I made $100, including Frank. It got to be about 2 weeks before the thing was supposed to open, advertising and everything, whatever the advertising there was. And the fellas chickened out. They couldn't get the money for one thing, and they didn't. It never had any reputation of being any good in there. You know, there was nothing doing in that building for so many years. It was going to be a flop. They didn't want any part of it.
But it didn't have that dance floor.
Oh yeah. Anyway, it was in bad shape. But
the floor was there.
The floor was there. Anyway, Frank. All of a sudden, the guys quit. He said they backed out. And Frank sat there with $100 debt that he signed for. Didn't have $100 either. But he got a whole bunch of his friends and relatives all over from every place to get the money. And finally, he got the $100, paid the guy, but didn't have a band. So he comes to Grand Haven, and he says to me, he says, Bobby, he says, that tenor band you got, he says, would they like to play at Fruitport? God, you know, I knew they would. We said we would take anything on those, any kind of job. So I think we got, I think he paid us $5 a piece to play. And I think we had, I think, 9 or 10 pieces, and we played Fruitport. And the first night, there was 1,500 people showed up.
Wow.
At 35 cents a couple. And Frank got all his money back the first night, and he had the rest of the season to work with our band. And, of course, we just packed him in that whole year with that Jen Gutter music. It just
Isn't
worked.
Isn't that something?
And it, that made Frank Loggins. That started Frank Loggins. That end of that year, he had made so much money that he bought the place from the guy. That's how he got through for it, see? On that one particular little gamble.
Isn't that something?
And my band, really, I always said that I made Frank rich. Uh-huh. I really did, because at that time I wrote all the music, got the band for him. After that first year, then Frank talked me into getting his own band. He says, let's get some players together and you write some, you write the music and stuff, and I'll take care of you. You know, he always just never did, but always.
I don't take care, yeah.
Were you playing there at that time?
No, you see, I got out in 35.
Yeah, he's a little
and then I went to college between 35 yeah. and 40. I was at the University of Michigan and Antioch College. I was always playing in bands. So, geez, oh, yeah. Antioch College, we had a 7-piece band called the Deuces Wild, and they had co-op jobs there. And one of the jobs was playing our way over to Europe on the President Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a good one, too. Yeah. So I'm going over there with a nice little 7-piece band. Geez, they could play good. And we had a summer in London.
Huh? We had a piano.
Oh, yeah, Walt Jones from Grand Rapids was our piano player. And we went to London, and then we had all summer over there. And from London, we went to Paris, and we started playing in July 14th, is what I remember, Bastille Day. Here we are in Paris playing at the French Exposition, and we're at one end of this big ballroom, and at the other end is a band called Johnny Davis and his orchestra. And
an American band?
Yeah, both of them. And when one band quit, the other band started. You know, continuous music. I go up and I want to see what this Johnny Davis band sounds like. So I'm up in front, and they said, the next song we're going to bring our male vocalist forth, Joe DeLisle. Well, Joe DeLisle turns out to be Joe Jobin from Grand Haven High School, who is about Bob's age, and I knew him in high school. He was always the big guy in the operettas at the uh-huh. at Grand Haven High School. And here this guy singing with Johnny Davis in Paris, France, and I'm there listening. that was about 1937, 38. So that was a hell of a coincidence, then.
Back in that day, at that time, the style of singing was big, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Big voice.
Sure.
It wasn't
sure.
the crooner. Although,
well, Joe Jobin was kind of a crooner too.
Was he?
Yeah, he was good. Well, ask Bob to him. In fact, he used to go with once in a while. I think he went with Lydia Warner. And
was that right?
Yeah, that's back in the high school days.
Yeah,
but see, I'm a little younger than Bob, and all this time that he's talking to you about the Fruitport starting,
yeah.
I'm out of here. I'm uh-huh. at Ann Arbor and Antioch, and then I went to Harvard, and then from there right into the Navy. So I never got back here again till 44 or something like that. And then Charlie Bird, he's starting out at Highland Gardens. And
okay.
He said, geez, we got a good band. How would you like to play at Highland Gardens? Well, I picked up this house right on the river, 212 South Water Street, right where that architect's building is now. That's where my house was.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, boy, that's convenient. These guys from Muskegon, they pick me up, take me out to Highland Gardens, go out, play 3 hours, they bring me home, and what's wrong with that? And we made $10 a night. $60 a week we got in that
bad. And that was your job? Or did you have another
plus
job?
Plus working 8 hours well, every day at D. Baker and Son. That was my second job. I was working two jobs then. I don't know how I ever did that. You know, you work at least 8 hours at the lumber yard.
Yes.
Then you come home, take your shower, get your duds on, your uniform. They pick me up out to Highland Gardens, play till 12 o'clock, come back home, get a few hours sleep, down to the lumber yard.
Yeah, something. And this was going on all summer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big crowds. The crowds are so big out there that when they'd pack that floor and we'd play something like St. Louis Blues March, mm-hmm. sometimes we'd have to, he'd have to stop us in the middle of the tune because the building would start to shake. And they had a roller rink underneath, and they were afraid that that second floor might come down on it. Oh, that was something.
Yeah, it amazes me. When he said that the very first night, 1,500 people showed up.
Oh, yeah.
So people were crazy about music. Of course, there was no television. Radio was...
Yeah, and they loved to dance in those days.
Yeah.
And it was more dancing than it is now. Now they just jump around. Or if it's a slow one, they just hang on each other.
Yeah.
They don't pay attention to the rhythm or anything like that.
True.
Yeah. We used to go to dancing school. Marg Watson, she was our dance instructor down at the old woman's club, and teach us the waltz, and like Corky Buchema does now. We had a regular dance teacher. All the high school kids learned how to dance the way you're supposed to dance,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, man. But that was apparently, you had to be there. That was the scene. Wherever the action was on Saturday night, it was around the band.
Uh-huh. I got started way back in junior high on the clarinet. First, Margaret Lewis on the piano. But I'm Mike Bob. I should have stuck with it, but I didn't. But, and my dad, he was a good musician. So was my mother. She could play piano. But I never really got hot going until this Carl Borgeson, who was from Muskegon. He was first chair in the Muskegon Symphony. And he gave us lessons. And then he said, why don't you go up to Interlaken? And so my mother got enough money together, so I went up to Interlaken in 33 and 34. And we had our band go to the Chicago World's Fair and the whole thing. And that's when you really got interested enough to play.
Yeah.
And then came back here in high school. And got on there. Hey, Bob, remember in high school when Miller Sherwood was first chair on his new silver clarinet that old BP bought him, and I came in there as a freshman or something, and we had tryouts. M.F. Richards had tryouts. I beat Miller Sherwood out, and Miller was so goddamn... Hey, here's a little freshman guy coming in there.
And you had a black clarinet.
I had an old J. Gross Blackwood, yeah. Oh, good. And Jimmy Lee, he was in there. He was in there too. You were playing first chair in the trumpets then, and Fred Kendall was second, and Wal Schmidt was the first trombone, and Lloyd Krause.
That's the original Lockheed's band that I'm talking about that started after the year after our Chattery band played at Foodport. Then we organized that band right there.
Okay, now where are you?
I must be right
there.
Here,
yeah. Know. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Huh. And this is Benny Goodman at Foodport. That's what they look like when they come to Foodport.
Yeah?
Oh, boy, did they pack them in there for those bands.
Yeah.
And good.
And here's a picture of the Foodport Pavilion.
Yeah.
That's our band in the front. And that's the kind of crowds we used to have there.
Wow.
Talk about excitement. When these bands would roll in their buses, I'd take off from work at about noon just to go out there and watch them unload and see them play a few licks and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that was exciting.
Oh, well, of course, you were into it. But
it did
draw people.
There's the inside of it being fixed up.
With all the crepe and all the...
Yeah, kind of fixed the floor up.
I even got to play with the Herb and Duran down at the Saugatuck Pavilion when I was in high school.
Well,
did you?
Yeah, that was another big pavilion.
Now, we've got to get this in kind of order for him. Let's see. Now, we're going into the... We're in the 30s yet.
So, yeah. And we've got this guy up. He's already gone through Harvard. He's back here in 44. While you're playing out at Fruitport, he's away at school and so forth. But
well, I went with Charlie Bird after I got back.
Well, he was in the service, see? And then,
yeah,
I was in the Navy for 4 years. Yeah.
So really, I was the only one hanging around here. I didn't get into... I was, of course, married and kids, but I also had some bad things. They wouldn't take me. I had high blood pressure, and even when I was young, I had blood pressure and all that stuff. I don't know, flat feet and stomach ulcer, I had everything. Okay. Anyway, and I was working at a defense job, but I wanted to go. I wanted to get it over with, so I went down to Detroit and all that. I was still hanging around here. But during all that time, when Doug was in the service, that's when Fruitport was booming. See, during the war years, really was booming. See. We started that 1937 band there, and we got up.
That started it.
That started... Mm-hmm. The Tannery band started going, see, in 36. The Tannery band got the thing started, packed them right in. that a lot of guys in the band didn't want to play with Frank Lycus and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of reasons for the Henry band breaking up, including the strike and everything. So that we got that band together right there, and that kept going right through till 1952.
Could you name those guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's something that we ought to do to make sure that.
Yeah, there's Paul Nelson, Bob Bull, Mike Lockage, and this guy here still got a store, and I can't think of his name right now, I remember it. There's Bob Warner, and there's, I have some of them I'll have to kind of just think over a few times.
Yeah, right. That'd be good, though, to get
that's
that kind of, down.
Oh, I can do that. Just think it over a little bit.
Those names familiar to you?
Not much. No, I didn't know, half of those guys, I never knew at all.
Uh-huh.
I didn't come in there singer. At that time.
Louis Boyden. I would just a few minutes. I'd get them all, but I'm going to keep you from talking for 10 hours and going into every little detail, which is necessary. But the big thing now, that's the fruit part thing. Now, how far you want to go, I don't know. But this where you can end it up by saying this. You know how it started now.
Yeah.
And you know the tenure band is going to do that. And you also know that later on. When Doug came back, of course, he played with our band, with the Fruitport band.
He did.
Too.
Yeah.
There's a picture. I got a picture here.
We played at the tannery, too, because we had six saxophones there for a while.
There's a picture of the tannery, see, where they played. That was a Lockage band playing the tannery. Doug's way on the right in the front there, sitting on the bottom.
That's Doug way down here?
Yeah, that's Doug. So... Now you know about that part of it.
I haven't had gray hair all my life.
Yeah. The football thing went on for a long time. And then, about 1952, the business got so bad that the big band started to fold up all over.
This is in when now?
In the early 50s, it was getting pretty bad.
Yeah.
The late 40s, it was slowing down. After the war was over, people getting married, and they weren't going out so much as they were before, and TV started to come in, too, in 47.
Mm-hmm.
So
that
took it, and... Fruitport from big crowds to practically nobody, see.
Mm-hmm.
And all the name bands would still come around and they wouldn't draw anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the late 40s and early 50s. And finally, in 1952, our own Frank's band, we didn't play there anymore either. We just rented out somebody else. So somebody made kind of a bar underneath it. And that kind of thing.
You remember that guy, probably.
No, I don't.
He was on the one that burned. I forget the guy's name.
No, I don't remember.
Maybe he put the match to it. Who knows?
I think Frank did. he owned it, I think. It's some insurance. Anyway, that's where the whole thing dwindled down. That's where the influence of Fruitport disappeared. Then the guy had a bar downstairs. We played a couple of proms, I think, upstairs in the summertime in the 50s. But Frank, in 52, decided he wasn't going to run any more dances. He quit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you think the music had a little to do with it, too? Like, these guys like Miles Davis came in and bebop or that sort, yeah. And that music got so damn complicated that the average guy that would go out to listen and dance, he didn't like what he heard. He couldn't understand what the guys were doing.
True,
it was so complicated.
True. Yeah, I can understand that.
And they lost all of those people that used to like the nice tunes that we used to play because they got too complicated. And then, it got so damn complicated for them to listen, they didn't like it anymore. And that's where rock and roll got their start.
Yeah.
That comes in with the next bunch of kids, and the first sort of thing you know, our music is gone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It sure is. And you know, it's amazing to me how quickly you remember it as being phased out because you were living with it.
Anybody want cream?
Yeah, put a little cream in mine.
No, nope.
Please.
But,
and a little sugar, too.
What?
A little sweetener.
As I remember it, as soon as the war was over, the big band sound was gone. Now, Kent was still around.
There was still Woody Herman was playing. Well, even now, you know, Count Basie's got a ghost band going, and so is Woody Herman. Frank Tiberi directs them. But boy, they're scarce. You don't see them coming around here much.
Well, the sound is coming back a little more, the big band sound.
A little bit.
Thank goodness.
Down in Florida, they'll have a jazz society in Sarasota,
mm-hmm.
and there's another one at Vero Beach, and they'll bring them in, but they cost a ton of money to do that now.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get them for any money like we used to do, you know.
We were down at the New Orleans Jazz Festival this last April.
Okay.
A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Who's that? Lee, the new guy that sings that was there. God, he's good.
It went on for a whole week.
I got him in the car.
And there's every hour it changes. And
yeah.
And there are 9 stages, and you can't keep up with it all. But I do remember the 2-lane big band was there.
Uh-huh.
And they drew a big
yeah.
crowd, and it was the old sound.
These college bands are awful good now. Michigan State's got one.
Yes, I know that.
Excellent band.
Yeah.
Picked that piece of paper out of my hand.
Yeah.
All right. Put it on the table in there.
On the table here.
I get
that goes there.
I took some kind of thick.
I don't want.
No, I don't care for any.
Your granddaughter. Your granddaughter.
Manhattan or something.
Didn't your granddaughter play with the Michigan State jazz band?
Yeah.
And boy, she can play trumpet about as good as anybody.
Trumpet?
Hell yes. Oh, Linda Hale, she can play. I don't know if she kept it up, but she could play once awful good.
Well, certainly, the big bands were gone by the time Fruitport burned down, 63.
The popularity was, yeah.
There
were still some going, but they were all starving to death then, weren't they? They couldn't make any money unless maybe they got it. Maybe once in a while in New York or that New Orleans Jazz Festival or L.A., some of the bands were making a
We're getting far away from Grand Haven and all this. We're talking to talk you to death. We're not going to get anything you can put
down.
Oh,
that's all right. That's okay.
But
I want to make sure I put this over when I get to the end.
Yep. Yeah, just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
But as far as Grand Haven musical things are concerned, the free dances and stuff, free entertainment and everything at the waterfront, that's probably a big thing. But in the early days, they had a water show there. I think that Fricky and a bunch had a water show for 10 or 10 years or more.
Right,
that
right.
was the draw down there. That's about the only thing they had going for it down there for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Enninga was running the community center, they were given the charge of that place, and the thrill show, the ski show quit, wasn't anything there at all. Hi.
Still at it.
By the way, I just got a call that Ray Marencia has got a heart attack. He's in the hospital again.
Oh my, you mean... What do you do now? Now, here's a typical problem. We got a job for Saturday night up in Whitehall. He's our drummer. Now he has a heart attack. Now what's Bob supposed to do, huh?
I've been doing that. As a band leader, I've been doing that for a long time. What, nursing babies and anything else?
Get on the phone, call every drummer you know, see who can play.
What you say, Jean? I don't know. There's so much fuzzy-dozzy, but she says that... I said, are you sure it's a heart attack? Well, it's just... The doctor says he thinks it is. I said, okay, that's the same thing it was a couple of weeks ago. He was in there for a heart attack and come out bouncing like a baby. But now he's got us again. So. Anyway.
Who are you going to get for dinner?
I don't know. Think of what that would be done with this.
You drum?
Musical contractor. There you are.
Anyway, that's the history of the waterfront is probably an important thing. So we're going to dwell on that.
Yeah.
I don't mean that he's just a musical contractor, he's a real bit. There isn't any guy in town that can take a piece of music ever in this town that can write a whole arrangement, transpose it for all the instruments, get up there and wave your hands a couple of times and have it come out right. And he can do it.
Well, I've been doing that for many years.
Yeah.
Tell me this: when you write a note down, can you hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect pitch.
I hear it before I write it down.
Yeah.
I hear it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas come in my head, and I think, well, now I start with a melody first of all. See, the tune has a melody, some tune I might get, although I write my own too. But I get a tune, and then I see the chords. I look at the chords. You have to know the chords. Those give you the key to what you can do to it, to the arrangement, and how you can make it sound. And each note has got a chord that goes with it in music. So. I know that chord business, and I can write the chords down. I can write an arrangement on the beach. I've done a lot of it on the beach or in all kinds of places beside never by the piano.
You have to have that pitch idea. If you fake, you know, if you're playing it as an arrangement and it comes to a chorus and they say, okay, you take the next chorus, then you're going up there without any notes at all and you're listening to the chords and that's how you fake. You got to have that pitch idea if you're going to do that.
Yeah, you got to have a feeling that, in other words, when you're arranging music, you don't always want to make the thing sound like the original melody all the time, note for note, because the melody is usually very basic, maybe four beats to the bar, you might say, four notes at the most, once in a couple little ones, but you might want to have a melody going with one section of instruments, and you might have to have a background for another, for the saxes, for instance. Different notes, maybe whole notes, half notes, or different kind of things altogether. So maybe some all kinds of ideas. There's where the arranging comes in. How to make an arrangement interesting for three choruses and not play the same thing all the time. And you change keys and everything else to do it. Anyway, that's part of arranging.
But, yeah, did you ever do that?
I'm not good enough. I can't do it. No, I'm not. Never, and I never have taken the time to. That's not my bag. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'll go on a job with four pieces in Florida, and we don't have any music at all. You play the whole night, just the guy hollers out the name of a tune, and you play it.
A lot of guys can't do that either. A lot of guys can't do that.
Yeah.
I always could do it. Not so good as I used to, because I haven't done it for a long time. I haven't been in a small band. But the main thing is, after my surgery, my heart surgery 2 years ago, I got some kind of a funny thing. I know they checked out, found that I had two minor strokes, and my coordination with my fingers sometimes, and my thoughts. See, otherwise, when you're sight reading music, you're just looking at the notes, but you have no feeling that you're pushing certain valves down at all. You're just automatically doing this. See, as you see the notes. Hmm. Well, when you're faking, you don't even have any notes to see, so it makes it a little more worse yet. You got to have it something
you're listening. You're listening to that piano.
You're just going to know. I don't know how to even express it, but I'm having a little problem in coordinating my mind with my fingers. You know, that kind of thing. Well, I used to be able to do that so good. Now I notice that my third finger is not quite as good at it anymore, and a lot of times you have to have the third finger on your bells. So I'm a little bit I play pretty good yet, but not like I used to be. But anyway, that's going to happen to everybody.
With the clarinet, you've got 10 you have to worry about.
Well, yeah, sure. And the saxophone, too.
Yeah.
The only trouble with the saxophone, they have an advantage. When you got the right buttons down, the right note comes out. And with a trumpet, one fingering can play about 20 notes sometimes, different ones.
That's what
I mean. How you can go up and down.
Yeah, because it's all down with the lips, isn't it?
Yeah. All down the lip.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's got to have not only make the vibration, but you got to have it pinch tighter, you got to decrease the pressure, raise it, and so forth. And that has a lot to do with it. But that makes it tougher. So that's why you slip quite often on a trumpet or trombone. You slip. You all of a sudden you go into the next interval.
Yeah.
The same position of your valves and everything. Which is tougher.
How many times have you heard Tommy Dorsey's da 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 da, and they hit that top note and they get another note there.
Da 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 da.
Yeah.
But the good ones don't have problem with, but people don't practice a lot have it. And anyway, that's West getting away from our story too. We got to get down to something so that you can.
This is fun. What the heck? We're gonna have to when these big bands came in. In recent years, I've seen you sitting up there with some of the big ones. Was it Kenton? Did you play with Kenton one time?
Biggest one I ever played with was Claude Thornhill, and that was out in the Navy because I was on the right ship.
Well, I thought...
And I didn't even put him down on that list either.
Who was it?
Claude Thornhill. That was beautiful band.
Oh,
piano player.
Ball.
Oh, God.
I saw Claude Thornhill.
I got to play with him because I played a lot of clarinet stuff in that band. Lots of clarinet arrangements.
Yep.
And you had to be able to play. Good clarinet was even more, it was more demanding than the saxophone in that band.
Well, if you want information about the big bands,
well,
I got
you guys
the most
ever
fill
in.
No, we never did do a big band. They wouldn't allow you to do that.
No.
I don't allow too much of that with my band either, unless I really know the guy, because you might have a genius set in there and he'd just be great. Then you might have a guy that's crazy, doesn't do anything, can't read the music and screws it all up out of tune or something, doesn't make all the sharps and flats. I don't do that. Not unless it's just an informal rehearsal of some kind. That's different, but not for a job. Unless, so let's say, I know the person. A stranger, they with the big bands don't never do that unless they have a, once in a while, a person that they know shows up and then they don't play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking, you, both of you have a reputation. And
yeah, but we don't have a reputation. Like some of those bands, for instance, Doug could no more handle their music, and neither could I, of course, but definitely me right now, but it's impossible some of that stuff to play that. Oh, it's just, even the name bands, they rehearse too all the time, see, and we never did, to speak of. Fruitport band did, but we don't know. But have him sit in on a chart like some of these you put in front of you, why he wouldn't do it.
Woody Herman's Four Brothers. Try that and see. That lets you know, that separates the men from the boys when you play one like that.
Yeah, it's a little tougher. Yeah. Yet there are some bands that Doug and I could play with, like for Dick Jurgensen, Guy Lombardo, those guys, you could play with them, because they just play simple stuff. But they won't let you play anyway. I never seen them try to sit in at all. Although what they did, I had when some of those guys like Eddie Howard and those guys came to Fruitport, Frank Lockridge would get me to write an arrangement, one of my arrangements, see, for that band. And then he'd ask them to play it, and they'd pass it off, and the guys would play it. And if they liked it, why, they'd take it with them.
You sold that one to Eddie Howard, didn't you?
Oh, I sold. I sold several to Eddie Howard, but and some other, Bob Strong, some other bands, and this piano player, Rick Williams. In fact, a tune that I wrote myself, he took with him, I arranged it, he took it with him, and when he made a recording on an OK record, he put one of my numbers right on the record, and it came out for sale. Didn't make any money, but it came out.
He's still selling. I just gave him $200 for some arrangements he wrote for the band I played with in Florida. And the reason this guy, the leader down there, wants him is that these kids, they play all this wild stuff. They love to play this wild stuff that people don't really like to hear, but the guys like to play it. Bad Jones and stuff like that. Central Park West. Now, you never heard of that, but that's a good arrangement. But the people don't like that. They like his 1930s medley and stuff like that, see? So this leader, he's an older guy, he realized that. He says, go see if you can get $100 worth of arrangements from Warner this summer. So Bob, he wrote about twice as many. I just gave him $200. I'm going to take him down. They're going to start playing those things.
Well, the other band that we played with for a long time, Tom Ravelli down there, I played with them too. He must have about 190 of my arrangements that I copied off of mine and sent down to him, give to him. Each year I'd bring more and more.
Of course, it was a Ravelli that was the band director.
No relation. This guy's from Atlantic City.
He's dead now.
He died.
Too.
And another band down there, Gary from Battle Creek, is using your Warner arrangements in a band they call the Pro Bus Band. It's a professional and businessmen. So there's three bands in Florida that are using his Bob Warner's arrangements.
Benny Boom Boom.
Four bands. Benny Boom Boom.
And
Buddy Birdie.
Buddy Birdie.
Five bands are using his arrangements down there. So they realize the commercial value of those arrangements. The people like to hear them because they're simple and they can dance to them and they understand them. Not too damn complicated.
Well, I've got, if we don't, I don't see where you want to get into it, but I've got tapes, of my band, good tapes. I got some I can probably just give you one from the phone, take it home with you. But,
I'd like to hear it.
We can get back to the waterfront again.
Paul Johnson, he was in on that too. And when they got that thing that we play in, wasn't he one of
the guys? No, I don't think so.
Wasn't he?
There's some guys that you got to thank. First of all, you got to thank Joe Eniga.
Yeah.
For I went to the Chamber of Commerce first, and they fluffed me right off. I said, I was offering them. Says the place is empty. You need some entertainment. Well, come back and see you tomorrow. In other words, don't call me, I'll call you. See, and I never did. That was the end of that. So I went to Joe Eniga and I says, gee, there's no entertainment at the waterfront. Aren't you in charge of that? Yes, I'm in charge of that. She says, but we're looking around for something. I says, well, I'll give you an idea. So I gave her an idea that we would play my big band there, see, and have free concerts. And we got the money from the Music Performance Trust Fund from New York, and that paid the band, so it didn't cost her anything for the band at all. So she says, okay. And She says, "Peter, well, what are we going to, are you sure it'd be all right, this and that kind of stuff, or anything?" It all went, I says, "Just give it a try." I says, I got the kind of music they like. They all know me. I says, "I've been playing in Muskegon with a big band and packing them in over there. This would be great." So, we tried it. And the first night we had 3,200 people. 3,200.
And that's 10 years ago.
That's 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Almost 20. About 19 years ago.
1970.
Yeah, 70.
Mm-hmm. 20 years ago. And it packed. And that those bleachers held 2,200. There was boats all over there, people sitting on the grass, but nobody danced. They sat all over, but nobody danced. So, for about a year or two, we played, and this is what we looked like when we were playing. No background,
no band shell.
Right out in the open.
Yep.
The wind blew, the music flew, all over the place.
And when it rained, the water all damaged all the music and so forth, and oh my God, we had some terrible times with that. But that's why the stands blew over.
Now, are you in that one?
I don't know if I'm playing there or not. Am I, Bob?
Yeah, you're right on the end over there.
Okay.
Right there.
Let's see.
That was in all of them.
Well, yep. Oh, sure.
Yep.
So we started that, and that kept going and going and going. And then we were playing
every Wednesday,
about 10 times a year.
When did they get the idea of putting that powdered rubber down so they could dance?
Well,
where did that come in?
At that time, we weren't dancing at all yet. See, nobody was dancing there. I got other pictures to show, too, but nobody's bringing them all out. But anyway, all of a sudden, like a fellow from Mike Muskegon, Tony Cuno, liked to dance with his wife. And one night, we were playing some numbers, and by God, if he didn't get up to dance, nothing on the floor, of course, just bare cement. And he danced, and then a few more went, not too many the first night.
This is about 2 or 3 years
after we started. Mm-hmm. See, my music wasn't, knowing that they didn't dance all the time, I had quite a lot of leeway with my arrangements. I could make some that could go fast and slow and fast and different, and something didn't have much rhythm at all, something smooth and everything else.
Uh-huh.
Like, okay, something like that. Well, I had a good chance to bring out a lot of the stuff out of the band, something different.
Uh-huh.
And but then, when they started to dance, I couldn't do that anymore. I had to get a strict beat. And so they cut out all that kind of stuff. But I shifted in a hurry, and I started working more towards dance music, and boy, all of a sudden they started dancing more and more. They threw some sand on the cement at first to help that out a little bit. That was a little bit, but it wore the shoes all out. Nah, then somebody picked up this brown rubber, and that worked real good. But that's how that thing started, many, many years ago.
You ever dance on that powdered rubber,
mm-hmm.
or what they saw on there?
Yeah.
It's all black, and you'd think it would make your shoes black, but it doesn't, and it's just like wax on wood. It works good on that concrete.
It's pretty good.
Is it a they sweep it
around? Brown inner tubes.
Some guy comes and sweeps it up and saves it for next week, I guess.
Yeah, they have a sucks up a vacuum cleaner.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that's how it started. And sure. Then, of course, since then, they tried all kinds of other bands over there. And to make a long story short, last year, of course, the city's out of money now. Well, I used to get rather incensed over something. I would be playing and packing them in. And then when they wanted to charge for something, they said, "Well, you can't play that job because if you're giving it away all summer, how come you think they're going to pay a dollar or two to get in for one night?" I says, "They will." I says, "I know they will. I'll talk to everybody and bring it up, so forth." So we started playing some Coast Guard nights or some special nights, and boy, they packed that in too. It paid their money. Well, okay. Then the Coast Guard committees got changing around a little bit, and then everybody thought they knew what they're doing, so they started bringing in bands from Chicago and everything else for something special for the Coast Guard.
Uh-huh.
Nobody showed up. They didn't. They wouldn't do it.
They lost their.
But they didn't want to give me that job.
Uh-huh.
So, but they thought that was not the thing to do. Hometown boy and all that. We want something outside special, and they lost their ass on all those jobs.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even last year before. I mean, they lost money. So last year, they told me at the end of the season last year that during the big Coast Guard Festival thing, the only thing that made any money was our band. That's all. That didn't lose money. This year, I got a nice report from them that they made quite a bit of money this year from our band. They're charging
our time, or you
they charged a dollar.
They're charging now. They're charging a dollar, dollar and a half on one.
And you're still drawing.
And still drawing.
Yeah.
Well, where can you dance for a dollar around here?
Do most people dance, or most people listen?
Well, right now, the last I got a nice tape here to show you if I've got time, but they are. The floor is limited too, you might say. There isn't that much room to dance, and when we're there now, by the end of the evening, there's no more room to dance. There isn't. So people are dancing all over the side and everything else. I probably could put that tape.
And Corky Bukema, the dance instructor, he's always hollering for more dance room.
They need more room.
They come back up their chairs so we can have a bigger dance floor.
Who is Corky?
He's across the river there. He lives next to the old Coast Guard station. And he's the dance instructor for the town. Oh. In the wintertime, he runs the dance classes.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and he, this hit. You don't know Christian Bukema either, I guess.
No,
he's in our class. He's a real big guy with U.S. Steel, retired now. Uh-huh. Corky's his younger brother, lives next to the old Coast Guard station across the river, is the dance instructor in the wintertime and teaches all these people like Cliff Paff and. That type of age person how to dance. Good, you know.
Yes.
So when they come, Bob has to play, we got to play tangos and rumbas and stuff for this dance class. Oh, God. This is one hell, this is a tape that the old chamber ought to have and edit it.
It ought to be for the records. It ought to be for the museum someplace.
Yes.
When I'm gone, everybody else is gone, that's going to be still here yet.
Yes.
And there's a lot of good shots of people who are there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Hope I can make this thing work.
Well, we can get a copy of it.
Yeah. You can copy these tapes, sure.
Sure.
This would be a good thing for publicizing Grand Haven if they ever go out and do any publicizing. Uh-huh. This is a beautiful one.
You're the same way I am with the DCI.
There's too many things on the band. I don't know. Too many things to remember and everything. This is a crappy one anyway. I got too many things. All these thoughts are coming, but it should be easy to really do if I can get my little piece of paper up. Well, give me one step at a time. Sometimes it doesn't seem to work like it does. Anyway, it should anyway, but let's see. To play a VCR, VCR on two.
That's on two. Okay.
Quasar on, let's see. Oh, a Quasar has to be on three.
Well, it has to be on three.
We're having the same old problem trying to get the VCR working.
On three, okay.
No.
Let's see, how do I change it?
I did it already.
Okay, you're
there.
Three down here, but it's still.
Yeah, I see, that's got to be two there.
Okay, all right.
All right, let's see. Turn VCR, VCR on two. That's set.
Okay.
And turn video, push VCR to start, on start.
Okay, now.
Put Quasar on three. That's that thing on top there. But even if I do all that, if there's still monkey business.
How about just play? What happens if you push play?
I'm going to try it again. Now,
I go through this all the time with this, and it doesn't work. There's a lot of thumb down buttons.
That's a rewind.
I want to see if it's working.
Yeah.
All right, now, it should, when it's all ready to go, it should just you put stop, and then you're supposed to just be able to do it.
Sure.
I think it's good.
Sure. I think you did it. Yep, there it is.
This is the beginning of it.
Now, it's just the beginning, so there isn't quite the crowd here yet.
That's you, Doug?
No, I'm one over. He didn't get down to me yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
You don't go to
the No, I didn't go down there.
Haven't you been down there? We got this gal singer now from Michigan State. It was terrific.
That's a song that I wrote. That's an original song.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Is that your theme song?
Yeah. Must have been blind, huh?
Yeah.
And the reason he wrote it this way, he must have been blind to get into this business. See how they got the waterfront there and the boats and the whole bit and the dancers?
There's the black.
Yeah, there's the black powder rubber.
Well, you can see why people love that. It just...
It pains everybody later on during the night. There's anybody who hasn't been shot several times. And that makes it nicer, interesting to put that on someplace on a display somewhere. Because they'll see themselves.
Yeah.
I took a count of hands last time. That was the last dance.
The first number tonight is called Mother.
And I figured out with a raise of hands that there was an equal amount from Grand Rapids, Muskegon, the Holland, and Grand Haven there. Uptowners were being drawn to, in other words. Pretty heavy.
Yes, that's another thing. He's got to get the trombone guy from Ludington.
That's
him. Tom Frederickson.
Yes, sir. I'm playing unison there.
Yeah.
The middle guy's from Ludington. And then in the middle of the summer, his kid, who plays the first trumpet, he decides to take a vacation, so then he has to round up Danny Kovats from Grand Rapids to come down.
So you don't play the trumpet anymore?
I did this year. So I do play it with a small band. I'm going to play Saturday, but... With a big band, I haven't been, but I did the first part of the year. I played the fourth trumpet with it just to fill it in.
It's hard to play trumpet and direct at the same time.
Yeah, it's been hard to hate band.
Here's that girl singer.
Oh, yes.
That's, what's her name? What is her name?
Gingrich.
Gingrich.
She must.
She's Meg.
She's Carol.
Carol Kirshner's
daughter. Carol Kirshner's daughter. You know Carol Kirshner of the Peaches and Cream? Tom Cavanaugh, one of our younger members, the youngest guy in the band.
His father plays the band. Carol.
The advantage of that is that he plays the bass with his feet on the organ, so he doesn't have to dig up a bass player. He gets two-for-one deal there.
That's the bass that you hear.
Yeah.
Somebody's on drums, though.
Oh, yeah, that's the guy who just had a heart attack.
Oh, okay.
Lynn Renzi. You hear that, Jane? Morency back in the hospital again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I thought I'm going to push this fast forward. Because it took a little while, and then you'll see the figure cut off.
Yeah, until the end of the night.
And we can talk about some other things for a while.
All right.
But that's how the big band thing started, and how it's grown. And I think that I was trying to push it that we could call Grand Haven the big band dance center of Michigan. See, and because we had all the people already, and I did when I was talking quite often would say things like that. And first thing you know, people from Grand Rapids and Holland and Muskegon were all coming here, and they were here the last dance too, for this dance.
Like Davenport, Iowa, they're noted for the Dixieland. They're the Dixieland capital. They put that thing on every summer, you know, on the Mississippi.
Yeah,
we could have the same thing right down here.
Well, you know, I think there is a tradition going here because I talked to this just one person, and that doesn't make it, that's not a very good survey, but he was saying he was from Grand Rapids, and yeah, they had bands around Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah, they had good ones.
The real place to go was Fruitport. Anytime you could get to Fruitport, you had made it.
Down in the old days, oh, yes. Yeah, all the big bands were at Fruitport, and we had... Frank Loggage's band at that time was probably as good a band as it was in Michigan.
Sure.
At least.
These big bands, they played Ramona Park in Grand Rapids, and then the Saugatuck, Big Pavilion. So there were other places, Rainbow Ballroom up in Ludington, but they had other places to go. But Fruitport was the crown for the big
place. We had the best band outside of Detroit, yeah. I think. There was Bobby Davis in
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo had one, but they didn't do what we did. They didn't play to the people. They played more
for the musicians,
faster for themselves, and that's why they lost customers. We always played. Yeah, I even do today. There's, of course, I play. I have some arrangements that are tougher, and we like to play better than others. But we still play the easy, simple crappy businesses, you know,
yeah,
tiny bubbles and pearly shells,
yeah,
and all that
people
stuff.
People just love that stuff. Yeah.
But they eat it up.
Please release me, oh man.
And polkas we play. We're the only big band that ever plays polkas.
Yeah.
Rumpas and cha-chas and all the big bands in the old days never did that. They just played swing and that
yeah,
was it.
Right.
You want a rumpa, you had to go someplace else to see where Kugat is.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Kugat, as a matter of fact, you're right. That was entirely
different.
Kugat, yeah.
Good band, too.
Sure.
Well, anyway, that's all it was. But anyway, I think that's where I made my best moves was the fact that I never left sight of the people. And that's why my band was always bigger than any other band around. You know, we had the business for years back there. Every week was filled up. You had to book us a year ahead of time and everything. Grand Rapids and every place.
Now, back in the 30s, were the kids coming out of school and one of the goals was to be a member of a big band. Somebody had to stimulate it. They had to be available.
Well, during the 40s, there was an awful lot of big bands. Awful lot of big bands available for people to go into.
Read your list. You got 100 of them.
Well, there's probably 1,000 of them or more.
Yeah.
Maybe that are good bands in those days. Maybe 100 is just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Some of the famous ones are in 100. But there were a lot of good bands that weren't famous, too. And there was people to play them. The kids who all went through school and they practiced and they knew what they wanted. They wanted to learn jazz and they did, like Doug and I did, too. My point, I guess, is that nowadays, of course, the kids don't go into the big bands anymore because there aren't any big bands to go to.
Yeah.
But they did in those days. But you have to remember this too. The big bands today are so much higher classed and better performing people because they can get the choice of the whole country in a few bands. They got the cream of the crop and the rest of people just kind of drop out because there is no place to play. And in those days, there were places to play. And when Doug and I first started, I just played at Jack Jumbo's, you know, and places around there, you know, $2 a night.
Keep going at Jack Jumbo's.
That
wasn't something. I played there once, and they had to put a chicken wire in front of the band because they get enthusiastic, and first thing you know, a beer bottle be flying up.
Well, I'm not kidding. When we played at Jack Jumbo's, what happened, where they really put the chicken wire in front was New Year's Eve one time. I was playing there. I was blowing my trumpet like this, and somebody came along with his fist and banged me right on the end of my horn and cut my lip up so I could hardly play the rest of the night. I was bleeding all over the place. So that's when we insisted that we got to have some protection from the people, because they were wild people there, you know.
Yeah.
No drinking that bootleg booze.
That was the 30s.
Yeah. That's before Prohibition.
That was out the River Road there, kind of... past Stansbury's house, right?
Well, I think they got some... beer just came in. It must be about 33.
Yeah.
But that was...
Moore's Barn was another place that they used to play out here, too. Moore's Barn and Jack Douglas.
Yeah.
And, of course, in Muskegon, I played with some guys around here at the Golden Moon and the White Eagle.
Terrace Ballroom.
The old Heidelberg. All them beer gardens in Muskegon opened up when beer first came in. Everybody had a little band. So you get in there and you could learn your stuff that way by practicing and playing with the guys every night in the week. You get your lip up and
you get technique going
and practice a little bit. Then you were able to play in a bigger band.
Fellas were playing during the Prohibition.
Yeah.
And so you knew what was going on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There was plenty of booze.
We weren't playing very well in the Prohibition, because Prohibition quit at 33, didn't it, something like that?
That's right.
So in 31 and 2, I was just in high school. Yeah, and Doug was in the grade school, so I don't think he played much at all.
Okay.
I got to play a Jack Jungle once, because I remember that big fence.
But I did play it.
Jack Jungle was a den of iniquity.
they all were. I'll tell you, the sanitary facilities were lacking too, you know.
Oh, is that
awful?
Yeah.
Any tree did.
Any tree or bush.
They had outhouses, didn't they?
They had them, but they were so small. Only two women could get in there. They had a great big long fence up by the opening there, and at intermission, be about 100 guys all wetting their lilies out there.
Oh, man.
But anyway, it was those are crude days.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's when beer first came in. It was 3-2 beer, too. But, of course, everybody doctored it up with something else anyway. So,
yeah.
And the bootleggers are coming in there in their wagons out there and selling bottles of wine and bootleg whiskey, you know.
Sure. Out of Jack's Jungle.
Yeah, out of Jack's Jungle. Yeah. And Moore's Barn over here, too. I never went to Moore's Barn, but there was a place
out
there.
Where was that?
I went too far out on the road towards
Mercury Drive.
Yeah. I don't know where it is, but it was a famous place for dancing.
Hmm.
And very primitive. And the other places they were thinking about starting some dancing here. I remember I was talking to Bill Eskew. He played with our small band years ago. They had a place called the Oakland Ballroom down here, and that's right on 7th Street, and that building is still there. It's almost where those two streets come, where 7th Street and Beacon come together. It's almost there where there's a pizza house and everything there.
Scribs Nib and all that?
Yeah, listen, on there.
Okay.
And back a little bit, there's a great big, long, narrow, two-story building, and that was a ballroom up there.
Oh,
it never worked very good. They call it the Oakland Ballroom because they were selling Oakland cars downstairs. But we played there.
I couldn't picture where that is.
Right by where you get your car washed. Just in front of it.
Okay. All right.
And it's up front's on 7th Street, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of across from the roller rink.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's right.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Right. Yep. Yep.
But that was a ballroom for a short time period. And then, of course, they had places around here. They would dance in different places downtown here.
Oh, the Armory used to have it.
Well, that's where I was going to say, the Armory. Now, that's where Herb and Durin used to play quite often,
yeah.
The Armory.
Mm-hmm.
Herb and Durin was, that's a good name to remember, because Herb and Durin played around the Ferry Hotel all the time for many years.
Mm. He was out of Holland originally.
Yeah, and he played jump trumpet, and he's quite a character. And he had a small band at the Ferry Hotel for many years.
That's right. I played with Bill Eskew was the lead sax when I was playing with him.
And then he was losing his band all the time, and the Fairbanks brothers came over.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a nice band. Boy, I tell you, Bob Fairbanks, Bill Fairbanks, and Wes Horton played with them, and Eastman Grand hit me up here, and
right where the Kirby Grill is now.
Yeah.
Used to be
the Gilner Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful dance floor and a beautiful band in there, that one he's talking about now.
So there was 7 pieces, and boy, that's where I got my inspiration for a lot of music that they were playing. I thought, that's just what I want to do in a band like that. But they were organized, and they practiced, and they played 6 nights a week, and they had a pretty going. Well,
that's
going.
How you get good, when you're out there 6 nights a week.
Well, so, anyway, who else was in that band? Anyway, there was
Martha McBride.
No, it wasn't
Grand Rapids band.
No, it was
Martha played with them in a smaller band, but not with Fairbanks. Not with Fairbanks.
Fairbanks was from
the
Grand
Fairbanks'
Haven.
Guys were from Grand Haven.
Lou Fairbanks lived in Grand Haven, but only temporarily. I think he came from Holland originally. Lou and Bob.
How about the Krause brothers? They were in there, weren't they? The bass, Gene Krause and Lloyd Krause.
Never with a Fairbanks band at all. No, but I'm trying to think of the rest of them. Wes Horton, Lou Fairbanks played sax. One, he had another sax player. Les Benson played trumpet. The drums was Mac McDonald. Mac McDonald played the drums. Piano, I don't remember the piano player, but it wasn't Martha. Martha played with Luke Herbert Duren once in a while. Anyway, that was the first organized band to come to Grand Haven that I can remember that had played nice dance music. They had 7 pieces and organized and wrote all the arrangements, and it was very nice. Good, damn good band. Mm-hmm. That's where I got my inspiration from, that band.
Holland did not allow dancing, I bet.
Oh, not much. But we played, Herb and Durin got a job at the Warm Friend Tavern, and he didn't have a band at that time, so we hired our little tannery band that we had around, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that we played at the Warm Friend Tavern there. He funded our band, and I can remember one thing about that job. It sticks in my head. Was that's the first place that we played that had a speaker system, you know, audio equipment, PA. Yeah, the first one. There was a great big round thing with something in the center, like we saw on the radio pictures.
Uh-huh.
And That was just a thrill to sit there and sing. We used to sing through megaphones years ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Well, Rudy Vallee. Yeah.
Well, I know.
Hey, that's another one I didn't put on that list.
Well, was he here?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
No, Rudy Vallee wasn't here. But, he was the megaphone guy.
But that was what we saw was, what you can say is during our times, Doug and my times both, we saw music come from sort of a disorganized bunch of smaller bands, which a lot of them, Dixieland style with no music at all, was coming up from the south, creating swing. And there were some society bands in New York that played nothing but, real fast two-beat stuff all the time. And Charleston's and so forth. That was around in the 20s. And then from there, the guys down south, the blacks and so forth, started bringing in the swing style, and Benny Goodman and those guys picked it up.
Here comes Ray on his polka. His Polish polka.
Well, I've got to get on that is to get to the end of show the big crowd there.
Yeah.
But this guy didn't make it.
But we were living when music was really at its
height. Yeah, you were.
We were so lucky to get live when before rock and roll came in.
Yep,
and,
right.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
We saw it come and we saw it go, too, put it that way, because I noticed that my small band didn't feel it for a long time. Because we were busy all the time after the Fruitport closed and everything else, and I took the band over from Frank and all that junk. But
You did.
Oh yeah. Well, Frank was not a good leader, you know, at all. And we needed a leader, and I didn't want to do it before that because I was directing two choirs in our church and everything, and all the years, and I was directing the minstrel shows around here, and I was writing music for the Miss Michigan pageant and all that stuff. Mm. I was doing all that and working 10 hours, 7 days a week.
Not now.
And played four nights. And oh, it was terrible. I don't know how I kept sane. But we did. I did take the band over. I went to him one morning. As Frank, I says, I'm quitting. I said, I can't do this anymore. I says, well, what's the matter? I said, well, you know, as you've been promising me for a long time that you were going to retire quick and give me the music. I wrote all. Anyway, wrote it all. Anyway, you're going to give it all back to me and. And this and that and help. Oh, you're going to help me with the stands. You're going to give me this and all that. I says that's all horseshit, and I know it. You're never going to do it, and I'm leaving. Oh God, that really upset him. Well, he says, Bobby says you play good. And you got to make good arrangements, but you are not a good leader, you know. I says, oh God, I says I've been really leading this band for 20 some years. He didn't lead it.
He was just the figurehead up there.
Yeah, so I'm beating him off and hiring the guys and everything, and he says that wasn't a good leader. So anyway, hell, I said, I think I can handle that all right. Well, he said, why don't you just take your band and put my name on it? I said, no, I don't want to do that either. That's the worst part of it. I said, I'm trying to get away from that whole business. And of course, the guys in the band were telling me to do, pushing me all the time to do that for a couple of years. And anyway.
What year was this then?
This is 1962. Almost 30 years now.
Yeah. Just before the place burned down.
Oh, yeah. And it burned down about that same year.
And it was right after that he got rid of the band that had burned down.
Mm-hmm. You wonder, that's where he got the matches from. But also, that morning when I told him about the fact that I was leaving, I went home. Later on, I found that he went to the hospital with a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So he survived that all right, but he didn't. Anymore. Of course, right off the bat, everything started to move better. Just as soon as people knew that I was had the band on my own, and hell, we started getting jobs that we had lost for a long time. We lost them to Tiny Piper, we lost them to Cal Calci, we lost them to everybody. And
we used to play every club we had ever. I mean,
the
Pink Ball,
parties.
The Pantland, the Blythefield, the Kent Country Club, Cascade, everyone up there. We had all our big parties, didn't we?
We played at the big auditorium there. In there
Civic
auditorium.
Are there any others left from your era that are still playing?
Not that aren't in our band. Not here.
In the Grand Rapids, or in the Grand Haven area.
You have to remember this, that there never were too many good musicians came out of Grand Haven. I don't know why.
No?
Not very often. A few, like, I remember Lloyd Cross was a good one.
Yeah.
He left for Muskegon. Had lived there for many years. I don't remember too many Grand Haven people making it. Do you, Doug?
Not very many.
Not many at all.
Not many. So there, Morrison didn't touch enough people.
Well, and Richard, he was a little too early for some of those guys. I guess they missed him.
But Richards,
he worked hard at
two
it.
Guys at least.
Yes, but Richards didn't stimulate me in jazz because Richards didn't know anything about jazz or dance music. He's just strictly a nice little guy, and gentle fellow.
Good band
man. I don't even know if he was good or not. Do you? I don't think he was real good.
No, good organizer, but.
Anyway.
Nice guy, real nice. That wasn't his job. He was really a biology teacher.
And in
those days, they all took an extra job, and his extra one was the band.
Okay.
That was his sideline.
Yeah.
Like Toma, he taught chemistry, but then he had to do the tennis team.
Yes.
Kenny King, he was the mechanical drawing. He had to do the golf team on the side.
Uh-huh.
They didn't get paid for that. That was just an extra thing that was tacked onto them.
Sure.
Yeah.
But they got a few extra bucks. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And now...
I don't think maybe much extra.
I don't think.
Oh, no.
There's no
school teaching jobs. They had no unions. There was no unions in those days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if the principal didn't like you, he'd just throw you out. That was it. Too bad. He'd been there 25 years, and he had his friend once, and he'd come in. So that's what they all offer. Well, I'll do the football team, or I'll do this and that. You know, keep their place.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But, we really...
Well,
no, here's Duck. There's Duck dancing his.
Oh, that's another funny one. He let me off for this one dance because it was my 50th anniversary. So, nice going. How are you like? There we are. So he let me off to dance with my wife for this one. See, so this Domry guy from Muskegon, he's a pretty good customer. He comes to all our dances. I'm dancing next to him. He says, I suppose Warner will dock you $5 for letting you off for one day.
But are you still paid?
Oh, yeah, we get paid.
Okay, good.
Who pays us, the city?
Yeah, the city pays us now, yeah.
Good.
But they're not losing any money.
Yeah.
The sound on this thing is awful, but that's a little bit of a box. You didn't get much sound out of that. But it's not that bad.
There's Eddie Cook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. Well, it's
bring the guy glasses on.
Is that Ed Cook or is that the water man?
This guy there is the barber from Spring Lake, a Slover. There's Cookie right there.
Yeah, is that Cook? Yeah. Now, is he about your...
Eddie Cook, you say you're in class, isn't he?
He's my age, so...
Yeah. That's the guy from Ludington, isn't it?
Fredrickson? Yeah, Shepherdson.
Shepherdson, yeah. Now get up there a little higher. We'll see the sunset and everything.
Now you see the ballroom, so-called, is built wrong. The only way they can correct that is to have some kind of a barge.
And then you...
And put that thing on the barge, and we'd be on
right,
the barge.
Right. Exactly.
Because they're losing so much of the dance space right there. So.
Uh-huh. It's still Muncie in there.
Yeah, now, did you write the drum too?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Writes the drum parts. Half the drummers can't read them, though.
Everything that you hear there is on a piece of paper somewhere.
I'll show you what...
That's what I just bought maybe a dozen, 15 of these things, arrangements.
Yeah.
And every instrument has a piece of paper in front of them that they follow, and it's all coordinated in this arrangement.
And he knew what the pieces were for your band.
Yeah, yeah, he knew them.
So that he wrote it specifically for that band.
Yeah.
That's, as you say,
that's
the
a trick. That is a trick, and this guy can do it.
this is what the music looks like when I write it. See, I write it so almost professionally. That's pretty good.
You're right, it is. Is this all by hand?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm writing some today, in fact. This is all this system shows me.
Wow.
That is, that's good.
Yeah, and I can show you a room down in the basement full of it.